Blog Talk Radio.
From deepest, darkest Africa, across the polar ice cap, spanning the jungles of South America, without a compass, without a map, Blog Talk Radio and Wildlife Educational Services presents Larry Batson's Wild World. Discover the wonders of the natural world with nationally known wildlife educator Larry Batson as we visit his wild world.
Hello, everyone, from the remote jungles of Clinton Falls, Indiana. This is Larry Batson, and you're listening to Larry Batson's Wild World exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And I'm going to tell you right now, all the folks that are not living in the Midwestern part of the United States, oh, God almighty, we've had a someday I've always dreamed of going to the tropics of Borneo, it seems like it's been brutal, but the day was much nicer, and we have a great guest tonight, so I'm glad everyone's on board. A big hello to all the people around the world listening. David Falconer in New Zealand, thank you, David, for the email. Also our friends in England and Ireland and way down in Alabama, Slade Monk, who listens to our show. Well, he'll be listening tomorrow morning as he mows the grass on that massive golf course as he loads up the podcast, as many of our listeners do. But we appreciate them very, very much. We've got some exciting guests coming up in the next few weeks. Next week, Robert Michael Pyle, the author and butterfly expert from Oregon, is going to be on, and we're going to talk about some of the books that he's written. Also, he wrote a very fascinating book about Bigfoot, Walking Where Bigfoot Walks, and that's going to be happening next week, Thursday, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So be sure you tune in that night or catch it on the archives. And also become a friend of Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. Big thank you to Eric Altman over in Pennsylvania. He'll be manning the chat room tonight as well as monitoring the computer and making it all happen. Eric, of course, will be doing the technical producer responsibilities tonight. And, of course, as always, bringing us the Wild World news from the metropolis area known as Indianapolis, Indiana, Dr. Henry Day. Good evening, Doctor.
Good evening, Mr. Batson.
We're very excited about tonight's guest. He's been a friend of mine for, gosh, it's hard to believe, over 30 years. And in a few moments, Dave Windsor is going to be joining us. He's an Indiana conservation officer. He's also now has a very interesting enterprise going on. It's called Windsor Training Services. And, of course, he's done it all. He's done law enforcement, EMTs, volunteer firemen, and some of the stress levels that these very important people to our society have to go through. He's developed this training course that helps them with the day-to-day activities that, as I was talking with him earlier, I cannot imagine how these folks, seeing the things that they see and dealing with what they have to deal with day in and day out, oh, gosh, I have all the respect in the world for them. We'll be talking about that. Also, his adventures through the wilds of Indiana, being a conservation officer, that job. I don't know a lot about it, but I have a little inkling of some of the responsibilities, monitoring the whereabouts of hunters and fishermen all across the Hoosier State, so we'll be talking to him in a few moments, and I know he's going to have a million stories. Of course, as always, bringing us the Wild World news, Dr. Henry Day, what you got for us tonight, Doc?
Well, I thought I'd ask what's fun and exciting going on there at the Betts and Wildlife Preserve. Anything new you can tell us there?
Oh, yeah. Today I removed dead leaves from the top of the tiger enclosure. There was about, oh, my gosh, I don't know. I scraped off about 300 pounds of mulch that had collected up there. So I've got to make a note to myself. Self, do that on an annual basis. I think it's been a couple of years since I've climbed up there and did that responsibility, That's what I did, and also making sure that all these animals, we've had 95, 100-degree weather. Of course, here's what they do, Doctor. They just look at me like I'm a nut as I'm walking around trying to do the daily activities, and they're just laying in the shade or one of the tubs we have full of water. The bear's just basically sleeping in water, trying to keep as cool as possible. So they've got it down, We should learn something from the animals. And, of course, as always, I spent part of the day being beat up by my baby baboon and our daily exercise and activities. And one of the activities that we did today was we went to the tomato patch And if folks go to Larry Batson's Facebook page, become a friend. I posted a picture tonight of baby Elizabeth enjoying a cherry tomato that was grown by myself and my wife. It's a pretty cute picture.
Well, I've been saving her some baby tomatoes, some cherry tomatoes. So next time you're here.
Hey, I'm going to tell you right now, we don't need them.
Hey, good,
you just have to put one cherry tomato plant up, and you've got, like, bushels of them. So I would say give them to the needy or throw them at your neighbor.
Okay, well, let's get on with the animal news tonight.
Okay.
We're going to start out in Providence, Rhode Island. Lobsterman Denny Ingram said he found a yellow lobster in one of his pots last week. Experts say that the genetic feature occurs about 1 in 30 million lobsters. Ingram said he plans to keep the yellow lobster on display at the Fisherman's Co-op at the State Pier in Newport.
I saw that. I saw that on the news. I actually saw pictures of the yellow lobster. Quite impressive. And because it's yellow, its life will be saved. It won't go into a pot of boiling water and be joined with a flab of butter.
I wonder what color it would turn in a pot of boiling water.
Did I ever tell you the time, though, Henry? You know, I had to maintain and take care of several lobsters. I was commissioned to do this for an outdoor extravaganza in Ohio. And we had, I'm thinking, like 110, 120 lobsters shipped in from Maine. And we built this huge tank. And, of course, lobsters are marine animals, and you have to, of course, mix up the marine water, which is not an easy task. So I did that, and it did quite well. But one of the most intriguing things that happened was one of the lobsters, of course, out of 120, passed away. Now, of course, I'm thinking right away that the other lobsters would feed upon it, like scavengers. They didn't.
Right.
They would go up and touch it with their claws. Every one of these lobsters would do it, would touch it with their claws, and then crawled away from it. It was kind of like a ceremony. And from that week that I was taking care of those lobsters, I could not eat lobster for, like, I'm thinking like 2 years. It was pathetic.
But it
Sorry,
I interrupted
you. Go ahead.
Okay, well, let's, I want lobster, thanks.
Oh, you want lobster? Oh, okay.
Anchorage, Alaska.
Okay.
Some conservation groups are challenging the state's lawsuit to overturn the listings of beluga whales as endangered. The groups are seeking to uphold the 2008 Environmental Protection Act listing for white whales in the Cook Inlet. The state filed a lawsuit to overturn the listing, saying the population has stabilized.
Well, you know, our guest last week, Jay Slack with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, that was his responsibility. He was on that committee, that group that decided when animals are put on and taken off the endangered species list. A lot of research goes into that.
We just put everything on the endangered species list, and we don't have to worry about it.
Well, the sad part of it is that probably one day that's what will happen because of necessity.
Yeah.
Except maybe possums.
And starlings.
Starlings, yeah.
All right, Palm Beach, Florida. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration has launched an Eat Lionfish campaign. The invasive species has been appearing in increasing numbers this summer, rapidly consuming small fish on the coral reefs. The conservationists hope that building an appetite for the fish will help decrease their numbers and prevent further damage to the reefs. Now you ran a pet shop for years that was voted the best pet shop in Indiana for many years running, and I know that you had lionfish there. Now, they're not that big of a fish.
No.
There's not that much meat on them.
I wouldn't think so. They're highly poisonous, too, highly toxic.
Well, that's what I thought.
Yeah, they are. Maybe it's not the same lionfish. It's all, maybe it's something different. Like there's a dolphin fish, and then there's a dolphin.
Right. Yeah.
So
the lion, the scorpion fish.
Right.
They're basically the same. Well,
Doctor,
I'll look into that.
Yes, look into that and tell us next week what you came up with, if it's the same fish.
All right. Birmingham, Alabama. The greater kudu named Kenya was born at the zoo last week. The 40-pound female appears to be healthy. Officials say that the baby is on view to the public and nurses each day with her 9-year-old mother, Priscilla. The calf can be seen in the Africa area of the zoo. The greater kudu is a large deer-like animal that's native to Africa.
Yeah, it's a big animal, isn't it?
Yeah,
extraordinary looking. Yeah, they've got the wild-looking horns. And, that's very impressive.
Okay, Titusville, Florida, baby turtles again.
Before you go any farther, I want to remind everybody that I told you this, that we are going to have the turtle lady on the program. She'll be here, and it's all because of you, Dr. Day. September the 16th, Donna Shaver, the foremost authority on the Ridley Sea Turtles. So, not to interrupt you, but she's going to be on.
I'm looking forward to that.
I am too.
The baby turtles and baby frogs, they're my favorite. All right, the biologists have released 400 turtle hatchlings into the Playa Linda Beach area. The sea turtles were born at the Kennedy Space Center incubation site, where thousands of eggs that were collected from Florida and the Alabama beaches along the Gulf of Mexico, they sent them there to Titusville to release because of the oil spill.
Mm.
But the baby turtles, they're doing really good. It's a good year for the baby turtles. Let's hope they do well.
Yes, it is. We'll have to ask her about that.
Okay.
I was told she sleeps with the baby turtles when they're in the incubation process. She is so devoted to them.
Probably warm in there.
And also, I was told because of the need for more females in the wild, that they can regulate the temperature of the sand that the eggs are in, and they can artificially make them either become males or females.
Right, like the alligators.
Yeah, like the alligators and pythons and lots of different reptiles. So, yeah.
Cool. Well, that's great.
Yeah.
All right, let's run off to Little Orleans, Maryland. The Western Maryland Rail Trail for bicyclists will not be routed through the Indigo Tunnel after biologists found that it was home to like 1,400 hibernating bats, including some rare and endangered species. The bats, you know, the last year have been threatened by the white nose syndrome, which has destroyed colonies throughout the United States. And they'll continue work on the trail extension, and it'll begin a couple of years from now. But the bats are the most important thing.
That's right.
Hampton Beach, New Hampshire. New Hampshire. The
was good, Henry. Say that again.
New Hampshire.
That's very good.
The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is offering a $2,500 reward for information leading to an arrest and conviction in the theft of a clutch of endangered plover eggs from Hampton Beach State Park this spring. Yes. Now, $205,000, right?
Right.
The Humane Society of the United States and the Humane Society Wildlife Land Trust kicked in another $2,500. This is serious.
This is serious. Well, let's hope it works. Wish I knew something I could use that money. I have tigers.
Yeah, me too. All right, Hilton Head Island, South Carolina. An 11-foot, 500-pound alligator was removed from a lagoon there on Wednesday. It took three gator wrestlers from the Critter Management Company and a truck to pull the gator from the lagoon.
I'll bet.
11-foot, 500 pounds.
Well, that's... I think they're not to say that the news agency is wrong, but I think that weights a little too much.
I would guess that too, because it would be
by about 200 pounds,
6 foot wide.
I have.
No way it can be 500.
Go ahead. What? I'm sorry.
Anyway, that's what I thought. That's exactly what I thought.
Yeah, that weight's too big. But you know, you can't believe anything you read in the paper. Like, you know, people can listen to this program and depend on what we say, but you know. Anyway, that weight's too. But I'm going to tell you right now, an 8-foot alligator's a handful, or 11-foot. I'm sorry. Yeah, 11-foot alligator's a handful. It don't matter if it weighs 300 pounds, 400 pounds, 500 pounds, because I've been hurt pretty good by 4-foot gators. I'll tell you that right now. So 11-footers, that's about right, three guys in a truck.
All right, now I want everybody to listen to this story. This is a very important story. Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. Veterinarians at the Oklahoma City Zoo said 7 plastic water bottles were found in the stomach of an alligator that recently died. Veterinary Services Director Jennifer D. Agostino said the bottles created a blockage that prevented the alligator from digesting food correctly.
Yep.
The blockage became infected and the infection spread.
Yeah, go ahead.
If you're somewhere, if you're at a zoo, if you're at a wildlife preserve, and you feel like you want to see the animal eat something, jump in yourself.
Don't throw in
a water bottle. Don't, you know, if it's that important to you, just jump in.
Well, it happens a lot. I mean, there's been so many instances in zoos. In fact, we're going to have on Dr. Voli, the head vet at the Buffalo Zoo in New York, and we'll bring that up to him. But that's happened a lot as far as animals by what people have tossed into their enclosures. In fact, I have in fact, I was at the Buffalo Zoo many, many years ago when we were out there doing programs, and there we were at the ostrich display, and it said right there, do not feed the animals, and here was some guy tossing popcorn, and I will confess that the red neck came out in me instantly, and because I was working, essentially, I was dressed in a khaki, I think he thought I worked for the zoo. I berated him, man. I was like, and I felt bad about it for about 2 seconds, and then I thought, heck with him, you know. It happens a lot. It's too bad.
All right, well, we're running a little long tonight. Let's finish.
Yes, we are.
Okay, we're heading off to Dodge City, Kansas, and I have to give a woo for Kansas, because I'm a Kansas boy myself.
Yes, you are.
The 2 Siberian tiger cubs were recently brought to the Wright Park Zoo have been given names. The zoo introduced the cubs at a baby shower on July 17th and asked residents to suggest names, and eventually they came up with Shakira and Jasmine. Dodge City, Kansas. Woo! All right. Okay, before we go, I want to let all the fishermen know that the best fishing days this month, according to the Old Farmer's Almanac, are from the 9th to the 24th. And that's when the moon is between new and full. But as we all know, the best days to go fishing are the days that you can get off to go fishing. So it doesn't matter when it is, just go fishing.
That's right. Anyway,
and that's the World Animal News tonight.
And we want to tell everyone that the Wild World News with Dr. Henry Day has been underwritten by Jet Kaiser Films. If you have a documentary, a corporate film you need to put together, Jet Kaiser is the guy you need to talk to. Go to his website, jetkaiser.com. He'll travel anywhere in the world. All HD, all very professional. He's an artist in his own right. And we'd like to thank Jet Kaiser for underwriting the Wild World News. We also would like to thank for underwriting the whole program, We Want You Cottages, way up there in Chautauqua Lake, New York. Their website, We Want You, WEWANCHU.com. They also have a very exciting thing they're doing right now. It's called iKids Fishing, where youngsters can download their photograph of that big whopper that they just caught and compare it with youngsters all across the country. That's at We Want You Cottages up in western New York, Chautauqua Lake. Also, a big thank you to McGregor Mountain Lodge in beautiful, scenic God's Country, Estes Park, Colorado, right on the edge of Rocky Mountain National Park. I mean, folks, if you stay there at the lodge or the many cabins that they have, you might have bighorn elk in your own backyard. It's absolutely incredible. Their website, info@mcgregmountainlodge.com, or use that 800 number, 1-800-835-8439. And we're talking about fishing. Here's the place to go, Santee Cooper Country in beautiful South Carolina, Lake Marion and Lake Moultrie, known as Santee Cooper Lakes. They cover 171,000 acres and 450 miles of shoreline. Known for world-class fishing, they hold 7 state records and 1 world record. I mean, they brought a whopper blue cat out of there. I'm thinking it's like over 100 pounds. Went fishing down there a couple years ago. It's fantastic. Here's their website, SanteeCooperCountry.org, or call the girls right there in town, right there in Santee. They'll arrange your whole trip. They'll get your guides, your motel, anything. And if you're a golfer, man, that's the place to go. Their 800 number is 1-800-227-8510. Santee Cooper Country down here in beautiful South Carolina. Tonight's guest is an old friend of mine. In fact, I've known this gentleman for over 30 years. He's been an Indiana conservation officer for 30 years or so, and it's also he's the one that goes out there and protects the game, the fish, and he does God's work as far as I'm concerned. Tonight's guest, and also his new company, Windsor Training Services, we're going to talk about that. My good friend, David Windsor, conservation officer for the state of Indiana. Good evening, David.
Hey, Larry. Good evening.
It's great to have you. Several things there
you talked about I could spend the rest of the night talking about.
Well, we will. We absolutely will. I mean, it's I should have had you as a guest beforehand because I know with 30 years of experience in the field and being a conservation officer, I can't even imagine some of the adventures and some of the things that you've had to deal with. And of course, now we're in the summer season of water and water safety. And as we discussed earlier, this is a dangerous part of the year, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And it's nationwide, it's not just in Indiana, but the boating traffic that we get, you know, people get out and have a great time, and they get focused on what's right there in their boat and area, and don't really pay attention to maybe where they're at on the water and what's in front of them and around them. And so we try to keep things as safe as we can, but unfortunately we do get fatalities and injuries this time of the year, and as you mentioned earlier at the beginning of the year of the program, we've got a sweltering heat wave going on, and usually people will migrate to the water, and we usually see our drowning rate go up just a little bit when we get these kind of temperatures.
What would you say is the greatest contributor to this of all the things that can be involved with boating and having fun, the great outdoors? Alcohol?
Alcohol is huge. Yeah, it's a big contributor to the fatalities that we have. Lack of wearing a life jacket when you're around water, and just inattention. If you put those three together, you've got a deadly mix.
There's a lot of people that even though they say, oh, I can swim, I don't even need to wear a life jacket. What do you say about that?
Well, and, you know, that's all of our officers, that's one of our requirements to come on the job is you have to be able to swim. But we still wear a life jacket because, you know, when you've got clothing, again, you know, if you get into colder water, you know, you can get your head, you can hit your head as you fall out of a boat or hit a log or a rock. Or, I mean, there's so many different things that can change. You know, it's not like you're going into a swimming pool where, you know, you can swim the length of the pool or, you know, out to the rope at a beach or something. So there's lots of factors that can alter that ability to swim and be a good swimmer. So, you know, like I said, a lot of our boating education classes really go into a lot of detail on that. And then, as you know, a lot of campaigns on alcohol and driving a car, and those same effects are going to have hit you on the water. So when you're drinking, you know, your fine motor skills and those kind of things are diminished, and you know, swimming's one of those things that you can't do if you are impaired.
So does it fall true? Is there a designated boat driver? Then if everybody else in the boat's like tanked,
we don't do the campaign quite as much as what they do for when you're going to a bar to have a designated driver, but it's certainly a great idea to, you know, if you are going to drink and boat, designate someone who is, you know, not just not drinking, but also knows what they're doing is important. It's a really good idea. And, you know, one of the things, Larry, and you're an outside kind of person and spend a lot of time out in the great outdoors, and I don't think people realize that, you know, how tired you are, just, you know, your body is trying to stay cool and, you know, the activities, and, you know, when you get inside from the day outside, you're tired, and, you know, your vision may not be what it normally is, and when you mix alcohol with that, you know, it's just, we call it a deadly mix.
It's a bomb waiting to go off, absolutely. So 30 years ago, what inspired you? What was the moment, what was the instant that said, hey, I would like to be a conservation officer for the state of Indiana?
I'm gonna get you a new calculator because it's only been 27.
27?
It will be 27 years this October is when I actually became an officer.
Okay. I'm sorry I added 3 years on here.
Oh, that's all right. After 27, what's three more, right?
That's right.
Actually, my interest in animals is really where this all started. I, like a lot of kids, grew up, I was in a small rural town in Indiana and loved animals, had pets, and I wanted to be a veterinarian. And, of course, then when they told me I had to go continue school for another, you know, 8-10 years, whatever it is, it was like, okay, I think I'll find something else.
Yeah.
It was in the seventh grade. When I was in the seventh grade, I found out about this job of a conservation officer, or in some states, they're called game wardens, and then there's a lot of other names that, you know, Ohio has, game protectors, Maryland has the natural resource police, I think Illinois has conservation police, so we're called all kinds of names, but basically it's the game warden conservation officer, but that's seventh grade when I made that discovery and started looking into it and thought, you know, that is ideal, that's exactly what I want to do, and I just followed that career path, and in 1983, I was accepted into our recruit school and made it through and got to be an officer. I was assigned to the Indianapolis area. We assign our people to counties, and I was assigned Marion County, with county that Indianapolis sits in, and the county immediately south, which is Johnson. It was my first assignment.
We're gonna backtrack just a little bit here. So you go into the school, or the training part of it. Now, was that what you had envisioned when you started the training course of being a conservation officer?
No, our department has. And a lot of departments started out this way and just through a variety of reasons got away with it. But our training program is called a recruit school. It's very military, drill instructor oriented. And when you go through it, you wonder why you have to go through something like that. I mean, it's, you know, every day, every hour, you're questioning, you know, why in the world do I need to be, you know, yelled at, and no matter what you did, it wasn't the right thing, you know. It was not what I imagined. I thought I was going to go to a college setting and found myself, you know, face-to-face with a drill instructor screaming and yelling at me. And a real quick story, which I could, again, talk about recruit school, but to give you an idea, you know, we're lined up in formation, you know, and Of course, there's like three ranks, and there was a person beside me who had shined his shoes, the military style, you know, with the spit shine on the toe. And drill instructor is giving this person all kinds of grief of who told him to find no shoes like that. And he said, well, sir, you know, I was in the military. I just assume this is how we, yeah, that's your problem. You assume, you know, you should, you don't do anything in this school until we tell you to do it. So I'm standing here next to the guy with my shoes that look horrible, you know, and I'm thinking, yes, yes, you know, I'm going to be praised for this, right? Well, then the drill instructor comes to me, looks at my shoes, and then it's, what, you have no initiative? You don't know, you can't do anything? You know, and then it's, you know, and it's all over again, yelling and, you know, going down to do push-ups. And you're sitting there going, wait a minute, you know, this guy did shine his shoes and has to do push-ups. I didn't shine my shoes, and you know, but actually, at the end of the day, at the end of the school, it's all about being able to just maintain your composure, you know, being able to handle the stress of, you know, dealing with people, and you know, it's a no-win situation a lot of times. And it's just being able to learn to work through that and not panic and fall apart and you know, either get hurt or hurt some innocent person. So just a real small sample of what we go through. But, no, it was nothing like what I thought. I knew an officer, and he was telling me, you know, oh, you need to be able to do this and you got to do that. And I thought, yeah, right, whatever, you know. I thought I was going back to college and found out real quick that I was wrong.
Well, I remember the year that several of the new recruits came out to our compound, and one of the instructors requested that I bring some lion or cougar dung, and he felt that the recruits needed to get a big whiff of that. So if they would, if they would ever encounter that through their investigations of some sort.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, we, you know, and not literally, but we throw all kinds of things at those recruits just to keep them guessing. You know, because you just never know what you're going to encounter out in the field. Absolutely. I mean, and I think that's one draw that I had to the job. My father worked at Chrysler, and, you know, every day was pretty much the same day. You know, you've got an assembly line, and, you know, it's you clock in, you do your job, you go home. And one of the things that was a draw to me was that, you know, every day was going to be different. You know, every season would be different. You go from, like you said, we're in the boating season, you know, coming up here in the middle of August, our squirrel season will come in, and once that starts, then you're into hunting, and we go through hunting right up to January, and have a little slow time, usually in the winter, February, March, April, where we do some of our education classes, and then we get right into that spring fishing, and then you're into the boating, and that's what I like about the job. It just it changes. Not like an assembly line where you spend an entire, you know, 27 to 30 years, whatever, you know, putting this gadget into this gadget that goes into that widget, you know.
Right, absolutely. Well, I know exactly where you're coming from. I'm the same boat. My father was a lifelong employee of Detroit Diesel, and he tried to get me to go to work at a factory just out of high school. And I just had this feeling that I don't know if I could do that. I just the same routine.
Yeah.
And God bless the people that do, or we wouldn't have a car or machine or anything.
Oh,
we need them.
Absolutely. Sure. And, you know, that's one of the things, you know. It's just we tell people that come to be an officer, you know, not everybody's cut out to be a conservation officer, and in the same way with, like you said, any other job out there. I mean, you know, and that's what makes our world go around is You know, we all have different interests, and some people are very good and function very, very well in those assembly line positions. And like you said, it's a good thing they do.
Well, absolutely.
I thank God for the military and what those guys do. And, even though I feel like sometimes that I'm in a war zone, not literally with ammo being bullets flying over my head, but I'm not sure I could go live in a foxhole someplace for weeks, months at a time, So.
Yeah. We're going to take a short break. We're going to come back with David Windsor, conservation officer for the state of Indiana. We're going to listen to a few PSAs, but we'll be back in a few moments. Folks, you're listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio.
Take me fishing. And show me how to drive the boat.
Take me fishing, so I can tell you what a great dad you've been.
Take someone you love out on the water and see where the water takes you.
Take me fishing because I miss my boy.
Rediscover the joy of boating and fishing. Get information and get going at takemefishing.org.
Here's a hot topic about our wildlands and living with the natural role of fire.
Yard work is not just a matter of pride when you live in the wildland-urban interface. It's also about survival. Here are some FireWise tips that can help protect your home from wildland fire. Prune your trees 6 to 10 feet above the ground. Remove dead leaves and branches and dispose of them before fire season. Water your lawn regularly and store firewood away from the house. Be prepared for a fire emergency by having a plan for your family and pets. Learn more at our website, and then sit back and enjoy. You worked for it.
This hot topic was made possible by the Teresa and H. John Hines III Foundation. Learn more about the natural role of fire, how to protect your community, and get the latest fire information. Visit the National Interagency Fire Center website at NIFC.gov. That's NIFC.gov.
Duty, freedom, country, family. They're the values that make America strong and what our armed forces are fighting to defend.
While many talk about these ideals without action, they are just empty words.
If you think America's military families deserve more, log on to thanksusa.org. It's a great way to thank our troops and give military families the gift of education.
thanksusa.org. Scholarships for America's military families. You can make a difference.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
In the forest, near the side of the road.
No need for alarm, sir. The forest is where bears live.
But this was no ordinary bear.
No ordinary bear?
Yeah, one second I'm having a smoke taken in the view. Next thing I know, I am face to face with Smokey Bear.
Let me guess, Smokey had a tip for you.
He did. He must have seen me toss my cigarette on the ground. He told me never to do that because it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
He's a smart bear. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
That's what Smokey said. I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous, and you're not.
Good point.
Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Welcome back to Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio. Once again, here's your host, Larry Batson.
Hello, everyone. This is Larry Batson, Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. I want to remind everyone we're here every Thursday, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time with some fascinating guests. Coming up in the next few weeks, we're going to have Robert Michael Pyle will be on next week. He's an author from Oregon, and he's also quite the butterfly expert. I had a chance to work with him in Shepherdstown, West Virginia at the National Conservation Training Center. He'll be with us next week, so be sure you tune in for that. Coming up at the end of the month on the 26th, Dr. Kurt Voley with the Buffalo Zoo. We're going to find out some of the behind-the-scenes things going on at the Buffalo Zoo. And later on, Michael Hodges, mountaineer from Estes Park, Colorado. We'll talk about some of his adventures in the Rockies. And Donna Shaver, the expert on the Ridley sea turtle down in Texas, and she'll be joining us. We want to also remind everyone that we're underwritten by several folks to keep this show on the air and make it possible for Larry Batson's Wild World to be on every Thursday night at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We want you cottages. Way up in western New York, it's Chautauqua Lake, and if you have a inkling to go musky fishing or smallmouth, northern pike, walleye, man, that's a place to go. It's an absolutely beautiful spot, fantastic cabins. Peter and Kathy Weimer, they're the hosts, they're the proprietors, and their website is wewantchu, wewanchu.com. And also, they're very exciting, iKids Fishing, where you can go to their website and download a photograph of that big whopper your youngster caught, and they have a big contest. It's fantastic, but check that out at wewantchu.com. Also, McGregor Mountain Lodge out in Estes Park, Colorado. And that's God's country, everybody, up there in the Rockies, 14,000-foot peaks. It's just breathtaking. You used to go out there years and years and years as a youngster. And that is the place to stay, right on the edge of Rocky Mountain National Park. Their website, info@McGregorMountainLodge.com, or their 800 number, 1-800-835-8439. And also, Santee Cooper Country, up there in Santee, South Carolina. Beautiful Lake Marion and Lake Moultrie, covers 171,000 acres and 450 miles of shoreline. And I'll tell you what, the big catfish there is incredible. Great place to go fishing. Here's their 800 number, 1-800-227-8510. Or check out their website, SanteeCooperCountry.org. And while you're at it, you're on that computer, on the internet, check out my website, LarryTheAnimalGuy.com. It tells all about our wildlife rescue work that we do, also our wildlife education programs. We have a brand new book out, Alphabet Swamp for the Youngsters, and that's available through the website. And my wife and I will sign that for you and send it out. In fact, I've got to send one out to New Zealand, believe it or not. We had one ordered from way down under. So that's LarryTheAnimalGuy.com. Our guest this week is a 27-year veteran. I've got it right now. Conservation officer with the Department of Natural Resources right here in Indiana, David Windsor. Now, Dave, there's something I've been wanting to ask you.
Okay.
Okay. Now, we've had several mountain lion reports here in Indiana. What's the official stance of the Department of Natural Resources on that?
That I'm supposed to direct you to our communications director to answer those questions. You know, as far as what's out there right now, Larry,
yeah.
to be total honest with you, my current position with outdoor education and training, I haven't actually dealt with any of those. But I can talk about some of those that have been in the past.
Yeah.
As you know, Indiana has not had a wild population of big cats for years.
And I mean
years and years, hundreds of years, hundreds of years.
Yep.
But, you know, to say we know that there are occasional sightings. Now, let me just back up. We do have a good population of bobcats.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as, like, mountain lions, you know, panthers, cougars, yeah, basically those are all the same kind of a cat. What happens a lot of times is people get these as pets when they're small. And they're adorable. I mean, when you go to the zoo, you see these little things, you see pictures. In fact, I just saw today online, a couple of little white tigers, cubs someplace. And, I mean, they are cute. So,
yeah.
You know, there are people who want to have an exotic pet. They'll get these cats. And as you know, personally, they grow up. And
yeah.
And they're not little house cats anymore.
No, they're not.
And they'll either actually turn them loose or their facility is not up to standards and they escape, and they're, you know, these folks are concerned with, okay, if this my cat goes out and hurts somebody now, then I'm going to be liable. So they don't bother to tell anybody.
Right.
And then we start seeing sightings. And then there's some issues, and I had one specifically here in Johnson County when I was working the field. I had a lady call me and was very, very concerned, and not quite to panic, but said that she had seen a black panther. And it was down by Atterbury, which is an older military installation here in Indiana. And, you know, I said, ma'am, you know, we don't have panthers in Indiana, and it was most likely a dog. Well, she proceeded to berate me over the phone that she knows the difference between a dog and a big cat.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. And what I should have done, Larry, was taken the advice of the officer that broke me in, that told me that if somebody called and said they had a pink elephant in their backyard, do not laugh, do not question them until you go out and look to say, yes, you do or you don't have, you know, because
right.
There are a number of animals out there, and you know, the most exotic, it just amazes me. You know, there's a place not 5 miles from my house that has a camel, and, you know, it's like a camel in Indiana, you
right.
know, don't think of it. So they're out there.
Yeah.
Well, on this story with the Black Panther, I'm driving the very next evening, you know, it's just about dark, got my headlights on, and I have this black animal run in front of me. And what it was a black Great Dane. And I got to thinking about that, and if you think about how the looks of a Great Dane, it's got that blocky nose, blocky head, you know, and a big, long tail.
Right.
And I thought, that most likely ran out in front of somebody's headlights, you know, just caught a glimpse. It would look like a Black Panther. So I marked that up, that was probably what this lady saw. It was in the exact same area she told me about it. But we also know that there are true sightings, and
right.
and those are not wild population. Those are, you know, exotic animals that have either escaped or been actually released from private citizens that have them. You know, our zoos and those wild life areas that I mean, you yourself have some. I mean, you've got your enclosures designed to where, you know, they're not going to escape.
Right.
But if I'm at a flea market somewhere and somebody has a little small mountain lion or, you know, something, and, you know, they a couple $100, I take it home, I think I can put it in a dog cage. As you know, that's not going to hold it for very long.
Nope.
So that's our stance that, you know, on these. I mean, it's really comical. As you know, I've been in the business 27 years. You know, my dad's come home before with some stories from the factory. You know, those guys at the factory that get to talking, and, you know, I say we as in our department has been accused of releasing mountain lions in Indiana to control the deer population. And then, you know, well, then to control the mountain lion population, we had to release, you know, something else. And, I mean, it just grows and grows and grows. So lots of those stories out there. You know, normally those kind of animals, if they are out there, I mean, there are exceptions, but especially the warmer climate animals don't survive. We have, and I think you even had some experience with it, we get an alligator sighting off and on here in the state.
Yep.
And again, those are, you know, somebody goes to Florida, gets them a little, you know, 6-8-inch alligator, brings it back, and, oh, my gosh, this thing grew up, and they don't know what to do with it.
They call me is what they do with it. I've got a whole facility full of them. Oh, God.
You want me to stop giving your phone number out? Is that your point?
Oh, no. Well, it's out already. I've the fine folks in Indianapolis with the Fish and Wildlife, they send them our way. In fact, I can still remember the one that the gal, she says, oh, she was heartbroken. She had to get rid of this because she was moving to Alabama or somewhere where she couldn't keep her alligator. And she was heartbroken. So I said, I'd be more than happy to take it. She says, well, can you tell me what? I said, well, we'll put it with other alligators. I mean, I can't put a facility up just for that. And she says, well, it has certain needs. I go, okay, what are those? Well, it has toys it plays with. It has has a little frog music box that it likes to listen to. And it enjoys it. And she said this with a straight face. It says it really enjoys, if you can, to listen to country music. And when we got the alligator from her, there was a whole folder with all the alligator's name, and we still have him. And an alligator's name was Sam, and he enjoyed his country music, and she had it all there in the folder and the whole bit, you know. And I'll tell you right now, Sam's grown up, and he's just like any other darn alligator. He could give a darn about country music, and if you throw a chicken in there, he'll grab it and go into a death roll just like the rest of them.
You know, if you remember how you and I met, was because of two orphaned coyotes.
Oh, that's right.
That I think that somebody had brought to you, and of course there's a permit that goes along with wild animal possession, and I think that's how you and I ultimately met, was over a couple of coyotes that somebody had decided they wanted as pets and realized that maybe they didn't, and I think they called Larry at the Speedway pet shop.
Well, that's when I had I was on my own, and they basically, the little cubs were running around, and they managed to snatch two of them and took them home, and through your professionalism and guidance, we had to even come up with a special permit to be able to keep them to teach children. And you know what's wild, Dave, is they just passed away maybe 3 years ago.
Is that right?
That's absolutely right.
Wow.
Yeah. Just I think it's been about 3 years ago the male finally passed away. The female passed away about a year before that. But they did a great job. I mean, you know, even though it's native to Indiana, these youngsters, they need to know what our outdoors is all about. And as you know, and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is very concerned, these kids need to go outdoors more. Just getting stuck in front of these computers and computer games and all that.
Well, I was going to mention your one of your PSAs you did was the Take Me Fishing.
Yep.
And that is just, you know, that is such a great thing for, you know, number one, parents or any adult to take a kid fishing. And I can tell you, my son, Jacob, is just a huge fisherman. He's going to be 20 this September. And but we started out as when he was real little fishing, and him and my daughter Jessica, and we have spent a lot of time on the water fishing, and it's really been a great thing for all of us, and I'm sure that both of them will continue that little family heritage on to their kids. But it is a big thing of getting kids outdoors, and, you know, number one, just the appreciation for what's there. You know, enjoying it as much as you can in whatever activity you choose to do, as long as it's safe and obviously not damaging to the resource. You mentioned in the news part about the bottles and the alligators. You know, we have that same problem out here in the wild, where people throw their trash and different things, and wild animals will actually ingest some of that or get caught up in it. And you know, those are all things that kids and folks need to learn to enjoy it, but not damage it.
Well, one of the stories I can recall from many, many years ago is a young raccoon got his head caught through one of those plastic rings that go around a six-pack of beer or soda pop. And if that individual hadn't come along, and I mean, it would have been a slow, torturous death. So people need to be very concerned on the outdoors. You know, if you take it with you, take it out with you. I mean, this.
Absolutely.
And you know what? Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I had a situation one night at actually ended up in our backyard was a raccoon that got his head stuck in a jar, a glass jar.
Wow.
And with that situation, I mean, the little six-pack ring is bad enough because it will end up growing into their skin, but and that's a much slower problem. With a glass jar, they couldn't get water or food.
Or air, eventually. Yeah.
And you know, that must be a very common problem, because I just recently heard where someone had found a raccoon, had a jar on its head. They worked and worked and worked and finally got it off. And, Larry, do you know the crazy thing? They must have just thrown the jar off to the side. The raccoon went and put his head back in it. The only thing, it must have had, you know, peanut butter or some food residue left in it, because obviously that's what drives a lot of animal behavior is food. But it is. It's a serious problem. Fishing line, that monofilament line is really dangerous. I used to make a habit of, when I was walking around, I'd pick it up and just wind it around a stick and make sure it made its way into a trash barrel. Because a lot of waterfowl get tangled in that. And, there's just a lot of those kinds of issues out there. But, that's just a great thing to, again, getting those kids outside, get them to appreciate it, you know, realize that those animals are out there and that some things are hazardous to them. And,
it's disturbing to walk along a water's edge. You just see trash and whatever people leave. And it makes you wonder, and also makes you think that maybe somehow, some way, we could step up a campaign to, I don't know, educate people or just say, hey, don't be a slob when you go out in the great outdoors. Like we said, take a trash bag with you. I mean, gosh, these reasons.
And you know what you said, you carry it in, carry it out.
Yeah.
That's the easiest little motto to remember, and so much of that's so easy just to stick back in your pocket and carry it back out.
You know, I have to be truthful. I didn't notice that when I used to go out west a lot. I didn't notice that so much. I don't know why, specifically in the states of Colorado and Wyoming. I mean, I'm sure there are areas that there are people do that, but I just didn't notice it as much. And it seems like, I don't know, whether people just don't appreciate the beautiful resources that we have here and whatnot, or they just, I think what it is, they just don't, they're too much into having a good time.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right. They don't stop and think.
And realize that, man, we're blessed. We live on a beautiful 20 acres, and I wouldn't throw, even on my own property, throw anything down, piece of paper, anything, at least consciously. I mean, I've caught myself falling out of my pocket before, but I can tell you, it's just the resources we have here in Indiana, and it's such a great thing that we have the Department of Natural Resources and all these fine conservation officers, and everyone I've ever met's really truly been a good guy.
That
we have them to keep until as best they can. I know here in Putnam County we have three officers. That's a big area to cover for three people. I mean, but they just do an outstanding job, and it's a 24-hour-a-day job. That's what people don't realize.
Yeah, we usually make our home phone available, and if every officer carries a cell phone that's state issued, and that phone number's out there, and people do. They call us all hours of the day and night asking questions, and you know, our wives and families get involved in some of that sometimes if we're not home. And so it is. It's a 24-hour-a-day job.
And you have to have a patient spouse. You have to have a patient partner, because I have another good friend who was a conservation officer for many, many years, and I can still remember staying at his house. He said, I've got to go. I've got somebody illegally coon hunting or something. And he came back about 3 hours later covered with mud and water, and I could hear it coming from his barn, the baying of this coon hound. I said, well, how'd it go? He says, I didn't get them, but I got their dog. He says, they'll be calling this
it's
morning.
It's a fun job.
He says,
it's
they'll
a
be
great
calling.
Job. I think.
And Sure enough, that next morning I could hear him on the phone. Boys, you shouldn't have ran from me. You should. One of you is going to have to come over here. And it was. I still cherish that story forever. Well, Dave, you've always been a good friend.
One of the best jobs out there.
Well, I'm sorry?
I said it's one of the best jobs out there. So.
It is, absolutely. And, gosh, you know, you guys don't get patted on the back enough, and people just don't understand what's involved to make these state parks and forests what they are, and you're all a part of it. I want to thank you for being on the show. Hey, I'm going to bend your ear in the future to come back on again with us, and we'll have other things to discuss, I am sure. We want to remind everyone, too, Dave's website, or Dave Windsor Training Services. Just Google it. I just Googled David L. Windsor, W-I-N-D-S-O-R, and it came right up, Dave.
Good.
It tells all about your training courses and so forth with EMS and police. And you, folks, just go to the site and read about it. It's absolutely fascinating. And we want to thank David Windsor for being a part of our program. We also want to thank Dr. Henry Day for bringing us our Wild World News, and, of course, way over there in the hills of Pennsylvania, Eric Altman for monitoring the chat room and making sure this thing runs smoothly. We appreciate his efforts. Next week on the program, Robert Michael Pyle from the state of Oregon, author, butterfly expert. He's going to be a fascinating hour, so be sure to tune in. This is Larry Batson. Have a good week, everybody, and you've been listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio.
Thanks for listening this week to Larry Batson's Wild World. Be sure to join us again next week at 10 p.m. for more of the latest outdoor and wildlife news and information, along with great tales from your host, world-renowned wildlife expert, Mr. Larry Batson. Tune in again next week for another exciting edition of Larry Batson's Wild World. Batson's Wild World is a Batson Wildlife Educational Services production in association with Blog Talk Radio.